I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, May 25th. After the police killing of George Floyd a year ago today, it's not just been policing or criminal justice reform advocacy that have changed. Washington Post columnist Perry Bacon Jr. writes, "It became more untenable to have no or few black people in most industries and professions." In fact, using the author Ibram X. Kendi's term, he writes, "We are in the midst of a black renaissance that he says white people and everyone else can benefit from, too." Perry Bacon Jr., who some of you may know from his database journalism at the website 538, just joined the Washington Post this month as their newest columnist. So, Perry, welcome back to WNYC. And first of all, congratulations on being a Washington Post columnist. You know we loved your stuff at 538. So I'm so psyched for you that you're a full-fledged Washington Post columnist now. That's very exciting.
Brian, I appreciate that, and thanks for having me. I've always enjoyed being on the show, and I'm excited about my new job, but also sad that I'll have fewer polls and charts and numbers in my stories than I used to.
The term Black Renaissance in the title and lead line of your piece that you attribute to Ibram X. Kendi, what's the big picture of what that means in 2021?
What Ibram is talking about, and I want to credit him with that idea, and I agree with, is that if you look at like a lot of high-level, if you look at like a lot of, we're seeing the, you know, the Oscars, if you look at the best-selling books right now, Isabel Wilkerson and Ibram Kendi himself, if you look at comic book writing has more black people in it than before, movies, entertainment, but just sort of beyond, even sort of like the head of MSNBC, the head of ABC News is a black woman, both are black women now. So the head of the Forum Foundation is a black man. So if you look at a lot of fields, that's the high levels. But if you look at the, we had an old world where I think you had a Michael Jordan, you had an Oprah, you had a Barack Obama, obviously. There were a small number of fields where I think there were a lot of black people at the very front. But in terms of like managers, people who are in the hierarchy, people who hired others, I think you're seeing more of a black presence in those roles in terms of the people who actually sort of manage organization. I think at the front level roles, you're seeing more black people in a wider range of fields than kind of like entertainment, athletics, and sports. And that's kind of what I'm getting. Mm-hmm. I don't have like a data set to prove this, but I think that's what I'm experiencing is like you, and I notice in part by, you know, friends I talk to at companies like in Silicon Valley or like in the media, there's just a greater urgency to have a more than one black person and a diversity of black people at the company and in major roles now.
Perry Bacon Jr. without a data set is definitely a new concept. But the heart of your column is about what's known as the pipeline problem in the context of what you were just describing. What is the so-called pipeline problem?
So, you know, I've been working professionally for 20 years, and in the fields I've been in, which is mainly journalism, but also I'm in politics as I'm sort of covering it very closely. But in a lot of fields, you've had this narrative for a long time is that we would love to hire more black people. We'd love to get near 13% or even more than that, but we can't find the qualified people. The pipeline is broken. The idea being, you know, black graduation rates are not high enough, or the public schools aren't good enough, or there aren't enough black students who study engineering or journalism or whatever. For a long time, you heard these kinds of ideas for industry X or company Y wants to hire black people, but we can never find any. I always found these to be a bit misleading. There are something like 40 million black Americans in the country. Hard to imagine there's a ton of jobs where not one black person is qualified. Mm. And what you've seen over the last year is a lot of companies, often with their white employees, been pushing them, hey, we don't have a lot of diversity here. What is the deal? And like pretty much every day now, I read about a company that is trying to hire at HBC, you know, historically black colleges, or trying to diversify in their hiring process, or trying to rethink their hiring process, meaning that this idea that there were not enough qualified black people was, I think, always wrong-headed. I think the more idea was companies wanted to hire who they always wanted to hire, which often was the people in their current, you know, stream of hiring, which was Harvard grads or people the CEO knew or people the CFO knew, and not really looking in a broad perspective about who actually can do this job. And if we define this job in a way that is sort of normed around maybe a white guy, as opposed to thinking about this job in a broader way.
And you note in your column that the pipeline problem narrative became even stronger in 2008 after Barack Obama was elected president. How do the two things relate?
So I think that I remember in that period, a lot of times I'd talk to people and they'd be like, obviously we would, you know, the country found a black person who was qualified and made him the president. So obviously there cannot be any kind of racial barriers to regular black person being hired at this company. You know, the country is beyond that idea. If only you're a Barack Obama style, the question was, if only you're a Barack Obama style black person, then you too can get this job. But the problem is that Barack Obama is one of the most talented people in the world, who has a degree from Columbia and has a degree from Harvard Law School. And also that Barack Obama, and I myself in this group, is a certain kind of black person who is very well educated and also very able and willing to sort of adopt to what I would say are kind of like at times norms of our society that are often what I would say are sort of white norms in a certain way. I think that people like Barack Obama, this is a credit to him, and this is something that I thought about a lot too, is are able to adapt, and I think the term is often used to code switch and so on. You don't want to make that a higher norm. We should hire black people who are good at their jobs in all kinds of ranges and not necessarily look for a lot the can we get the Obama type. That may not be exactly the right metric to describe who is qualified, who is black. And I think now, like I said, you're getting more people hired who maybe have dreadlocks, or maybe who talk a certain way that sounds more black, or maybe who went to Howard instead of Harvard. I think you're seeing a rise of people who I think are different than that sort of, you know, Obama-ish norm.
Washington Post columnist Perry Bacon Jr. with us. Another example you use in the column along those lines is the Democratic Party recruiting Raphael Warnock to run for one of those two now very famous U.S. Senate seats from Georgia that the party won in the special elections in January to take a majority in the U.S. Senate. What's the Senator Warnock story in this context?
It's two things. It's first of all that the Democrat, like I think the electorate in Georgia is the Democratic electorate in Georgia is about a half black. So the plurality of Democratic voters, people who vote for Democrats generally in Georgia, are black. So there were two open Senate seats, as you recall. So I think a decade ago, the Democrats would have done one of these. We need to find an electable person. And electable often in the South for Democrats codes is we need to find a white guy who seems palatable to sort of quote unquote swing voters who are always, of course, white. And so that is what the Democratic Party used to do. And I think in this sort of post-Black Lives Matter, also the Stacey Abrams campaign did very well there. But I think in this sort of post-Black Lives Matter era, the Democratic Party was pretty aware they would have got a lot of criticism if they ran two white guys or two white people in a state like Georgia where the majority of Democratic voters are black. So they went out of the way to find a black candidate, which I think is important. You know, John Ossoff, a white candidate, also ran. So they had a black candidate and a white candidate. But I think the important part as well is that you had a period of time after Obama ran where there was a search for a lot of, you know, people who I think are very good politicians, Cory Booker among them, who are often the sort of person, again, who went to an Ivy League school, whose sort of their environment is kind of the elite white settings in a certain way. I know Cory Booker was the mayor of Newark, so I'm not trying to diminish his other parts of his biography. But I think Warnock is a person who went to Morehouse and then spent his, you know, went to seminary and then has spent his time running a majority black church. And this is that unusual, and that background is kind of one that is more, that is not necessarily Obama-ish in a certain way. It's like, you know, it's not an Ivy League school background. It's not credentialed in the way we often think of in sort of D.C. circles. But Warnock went to seminary, went to Morehouse. These are great education. And then then ran a black church for a while, which is a different kind of achievement than teaching law at the University of Chicago as Obama did, but not a worse kind of accomplishment. In other words, there are lots of black people qualified to do things, and I think Warnock's been an excellent senator so far and is quite intelligent and quite good at his job, but when you get away from the we're looking for the next Obama-ish person, it expands out the opportunities for black politicians and really every kind of politician.
Yeah, really interesting. And I think another really interesting thing from your column is that you're right, this casting of a wider net is also better for, say, white community college graduates or Latino graduates of state schools as opposed to big, small elite private institutions. How does that follow that it would benefit certain kinds of white people, for example, if the focus this last year leading to what we've been discussing so far has been on racial justice for black Americans?
So my argument is like we've a long time in our society, this idea of there's a pipeline, and therefore if the idea is you can't fight, these jobs are so hard to fill, we can't hire any black person for the job. I think the implication is obvious, is embedded in there, is like lots of people cannot do this work. This work is too hard. This working at this institution or being an engineer at Google or writing for the Atlantic, if it's too hard for almost every black person, I think the implication is it's probably too hard for most white people, most Latinos, and most Asians too. So if you have to have a degree from Yale or a degree from Harvard, I went to Yale, so I'm open about how this bias helped me in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So if the idea is you can only a few people from a few schools with a few backgrounds can qualify for a lot of jobs, that's gonna exclude everybody. Like most people did not go to Yale, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, etc. Most people did not go to Ivy League schools. A lot of people went to the community colleges. So once you get out of this mindset that we have a sort of a scarcity of talent and that very few people can do these jobs, and get to a mindset, which I think is true, which is a lot of people. I'm going to be honest, Brian. I think a lot of people could host a radio show. I think a lot of people can be Washington Post columnists. And I think that you and I have lucked into these jobs. We've also worked hard at them. But I think when we move our society from a one in which there's a view that we have a scarcity of talent and one toward a view that we have an abundance of people who can do lots of things and we're trying to sort of maximize that talent, that I think that's a better society for everybody.
Could that thinking backfire, though, in racial justice terms, because we know that less qualified white people are often perceived as more ready than more qualified black people, right?
I think if we're trying to open up opportunity, let me give it a specific here. I think if I was trying to reform like Yale University, my goal would not be to say, I figured out some formula where more black people should go, so we should increase the black number and decrease the white number. What I'm probably more, if you got to my actual views of this, might be more, we should increase the number of, Yale is saying only 1,200 people should go, but in my view, I'm guessing there are 5,000 or 10. I'm not sure how big Yale can be, but I think there's probably more qualified people. So what I'm sort of advocating is less that we replace black for white or white college grad, white non-college grad, replacing white person with a college degree, and more to expand the number of jobs we have and opportunities we have, period. I agree everyone can't have a radio show, so I've got to think about this in some form, but I think part of the question is if a lot more people are qualified, I think it raises questions about how do we increase the pie as opposed to redistributing in different ways.
And so last question on this, you make the case that this black renaissance that you write about shows the path to an American renaissance, and we should take that path not just because it's more fair to people who've been marginalized by prestigious institutions, but for those institutions themselves. Want to make that case for any skeptical hiring managers or college admissions officers out there in our last minute?
Yeah, I mean, I read the media a lot, so I'm very aware of that. But I just think the world we're in now, where we have a greater diversity of voices, and I mean, and let's say in the racial context, I see more graduates of Howard and Morehouse writing pieces, and they're probably the same number of Yale and Harvard graduates, but we have more black people with different experiences than mine, or I would say Barack Obama's, writing pieces in publications. And I think that the country has learned a lot about racial issues in these last 3 years because we have people with black people with different experiences. And I would say black people sort of with more challenging experiences often. Like Yale graduates like me are probably not the best people to tell the challenges of being black in America. And I think we've benefited from having a broader group of people telling those stories. And my guess is that would apply to white people, Hispanics as well, in the sense that if we have a greater diversity of storytelling, we're going to have a greater diversity of experiences that are being expressed. I think we'll end up with better quality work if we have more people doing that work and more perspectives involved in that work.
Perry Bacon Jr., many of you knew him from his work at 538. He's now a Washington Post columnist as of this month. And as I said at the beginning, for listeners just tuning in, we were already Perry Bacon fans here at the Brian Lehrer Show, and we always have enjoyed you coming on the show, and we look forward to you continuing to do so in your new role at the Washington Post. Thanks a lot, and again, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.